Ladies and gentle them, welcome to Fans the podcast for all the... Listen, we are trying to figure out how to start it off this damn show, okay? Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to Fans the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am politics and pop culture journalist and writer, Jared Hill.
And I am number 55 on the Route 100, motherfuckers, Travell Anderson. Thank you so much.
Off, you bad bitch.
Yes, I am. Somebody's paying attention to the work that's being done.
The work, baby, the work. Congratulations.
Jesus, anyway.
If you missed that, Travell is number 55 on the Roots 100, their celebration of 100 influential people in Black community this year. And Travell is on the list, so congratulations.
I don't know how. I'm on a list with Beyonce, but I will take it. Praise the Lord. But coming up on the show today, we're talking about the hottest peaches in Hotlanta in our Fanti segment, okay? But first, we've got a little bit of tea time, which, as you all, our longtime listeners will know, tea time is the recurring segment that we do where I give you all a little bit of update on my therapy journey, okay? Last time, I think I told you all that I, you know, was just getting into therapy, that I use this service that's like LGBTQ inclusive, and they assigned me this white woman. And surprise, surprise, the white woman did not work, okay? But now I have a beautiful Black woman. Her name is Monique.
Monique, a Nubian queen.
A Nubian queen. She she's great, you know. She calls me on my bullshit, but you know, I
really?
I don't get that feeling that I want to fight her, which I think is the perfect road that a therapist should toe. And you know, we've been able to do some really great work. You know, I think I've talked to you about this before, but like one of the things that like I have horrible memory, period. Right. But I particularly don't remember much about childhood. Like, I remember like one instance at 4, and then there's a big old gap until high school. Right.
A therapist loves to hear that.
Well, listen, you know, we did some unpacking, you know, some unpacking.
It sounds like you've packed some things away. Tell me more.
You know, it was really interesting. She has this theory that, like, you know, because of this, you know, this instance that happened when I was 4, which will be in the memoir, stay tuned, that I basically, long story short, was like, that the person I am today was not the person who was like living and existing back then. And so that's why there's no like memory there, because it was like a different person, a different conception of self, right, that was moving through the world as a child for the sake of like survival and fitting in. And I thought that was like, okay, sis, you might be earning this check I'm giving you, honey. You might be earning it.
So it sounds like you're getting your money's worth out of this woman, and also discovering some things that you may not have even known were there. Or how has that been for you?
Well, I wouldn't say I didn't know it was there, but to hear somebody else put it into words, what has been a, let's just say it's been an experience. And a positive one, to be clear. And I think that, you know, she gets it, you know. I don't feel like I have to do, you know, the teaching or the explaining, right, which was a concern with the other therapist. And this feels good. It feels right. But I know you were, I think, investigating and looking into some therapies.
Yeah, I haven't found a new therapist yet. I've just been like doing my own shit and like talking with mentors and like asking questions and things like that. I recently had a conversation with someone that really like has kind of like shaken up my whole like shit. And so we were discussing like my career and my life and all of these different things. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, you know, oh, you're such an ideas person. Like, you're really good with like coming up with an idea and pulling things together and, you know, figuring out what it takes to start them and send them out and then like moving on to the next project and moving and like and doing things. And like when she said that to me, it definitely landed. But then I thought to myself, like, she was talking to me about that being like my superpower, like you know, you should be doing that all the time. That's what you do. And like for years, I have been calling that me being a quitter. Mm-hmm. And so hearing her say that was my superpower and it wasn't my, you know, my fatal flaw, like it really, really changed something for me. And so I've been like really looking at my career in a different way and the things that I'm doing and wanting to do. And so that has been like a major paradigm shift for me in the last couple of weeks, if you will.
Sound like to me, you still need to get your ass in therapy.
I
formally, you know,
I just said, if I were to just slap you smooth across the face.
Well, listen, you a lot of things, but stupid ain't one of them, okay?
But stupid ain't one of them. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, are you ready?
Let's do it.
I'm literally known for pulling a receipt on a bitch, so don't get checked. Huh? What is yours?
Slaying is a habit. Just look at the material.
We are getting ready to give the Fanti treatment to the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Don't go anywhere, Fanti. It's coming right back.
Oh, God.
Hey, you like movies? What about coming up with movie ideas over the course of an hour? Because that's what we do every week on Story Break, a writer's room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to come up with a pitch for a movie or TV show based off of totally zany prompts.
Like that time we reimagined Star Wars based on our phone's autocomplete.
Luke Skywalker is a family man and it's Star Wars, but it's a good idea.
Okay, how about that time we broke the story of a bunch of Disney Channel original movies based solely on the title and the poster?
Okay, Sarah Hyland is a 50-foot woman. Let's just go with it, guys. Okay,
or the time we finally cracked the Adobe Photoshop feature film.
Stamp tool is your Woody, and then the autofill is the new Buzz Lightyear.
Join us as we have a good time imagining all the movies Hollywood is too cowardly to make. Story Break comes out every Thursday on Maximum Fun. I don't know why I'm using this voice now.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Alrighty, beautiful people, welcome back. Now, last week in reality television news, NeNe Leakes, HBIC of RHOA, announced that she will not be returning again to the franchise that she helped start in 2008. She has been on the show for almost every season, as has the one and only Candy Burris, during which time, that's, you know, 12, 13 some 12. Odd years, the show has been hotly criticized for a number of different reasons. So, in recognition of this moment of Miss Leakes not returning to the show, we're going to criticize it some more by giving the Housewives of Atlanta the Fanti treatment. I guess where I want to start is everyone says that, like, when they think of Housewives of Atlanta, they think of NeNe. What was your response to hearing that, you know, the negotiations didn't work out and sis won't be returning
next whatever season? The truth actually is, right? Right. When I heard that NeNe wasn't coming back, I was a little bit relieved, actually. Because I do think that, like, the Atlanta franchise is definitely born on the back of NeNe Leakes, right? Lanithia Monique Leakes.
Yes, Lanithia.
But I think that I'm tired of her. Like, I think that, like, we've seen so many seasons where, like, NeNe spends all this time talking about how she was being a good friend, and you ain't being a good friend, and I need you to be a better friend. Feel sorry for you know, like, it just it was just a lot, and I was just like, I need you to do something new. Like, I'm tired of you always talking about friendship and always being a shit friend, and so I was tired of her by the end of last season. So when they said she wasn't coming back, I was pretty happy. How are you feeling about it?
Well, I mean, so I don't watch Housewives of Atlanta for NeNe. Like she's.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say you don't watch it, and I was like, that's gonna make this episode very difficult. Okay.
Yeah, I don't watch it for Nene. I've never watched it for Nene. Even first season, I wasn't watching for Nene, right? But I feel like I didn't really.
You're waiting to see when Sheree was gonna shift the wig.
There are so many moments.
You were watching for Deshaun Snow, clearly.
Lisa Wu, honey. Okay. All right. But I just never, Nene wasn't the thing that like kept me intrigued that first season.
When her eyes was popping and her lips was busting.
I hate you so much right now. I hate you so much right now.
Season one is so bad. It's so bad.
But the season one of most reality shows from that time period, right, are trash. So let's talk about like our relationship to the show. I feel like for me, I can say The Housewives of Atlanta, my partner and I, we have been rewatching it from season one in quarantine, okay? It has been a very enjoyable experience to just see the transition in faces, you know, all at once.
In like, faces?
In faces. I said what I said.
I contoured my nose.
Oh,
It is just, it's
funny because the faces have definitely transitioned. I'll give you that.
They have. And you know, listen, when you got the money, you can do what the hell you want. If you don't like it, fix it. Okay. But I feel like with everyone that's come and gone on the show, you know, speaking of Nene, she's just been, she hasn't given me that ooh ah ah sensation since like season 7 or something like that.
Oh wow, okay.
You know, like she's been there and it's been cute or whatever, but like I've fallen in love with Candy Burris. Now if Candy Burris don't do the show no more,
listen,
then I'm gonna have an issue. I'm gonna have to call up Andy, okay, over at the Bravo.
So I feel very much the same way. Like The Real Housewives of Atlanta is very much about Candy for me. I want to see what Candy is doing, what job she's launching this year.
Listen.
I want to know, you know, what hair she's giving us this season. I feel like Candy is really like the center of it for me, but like I want to see how Kenya is going to be a factor. I want to see how, who Cynthia is best friends with this year, you know.
Oh, the shade.
I want to see where the progress is for She by Sheree this season. You know what I mean? Like it's a combination of things. Nene has always been a part of that, but like her leaving the show to me does not hurt it. And if I'm not mistaken, she was gone for one season before.
Correct.
And then came back. I think that she thinks that she's going to do a play this year where she's going to be like, we'll see what the ratings do and I'll come back with more money next season like she did before. But I don't think that's going to happen this time because I'm over it.
Well, so let's get into the fan, you know, what we love about the show. I just find it so goddamn entertaining.
It is.
I laugh my ass off. I am invested in these people. I want to see them win. I want to see a couple of them lose. Like, I feel, especially with the folks who've been on the show so long, whether that's Candy, whether that's Portia, whether that's Sheree, you know, even Nene to an extent, like, I want to see them evolve and I buy into whatever storyline they're trying to feed us.
I even have something I didn't know that I would ever hear myself saying. I've even sort of enjoyed the evolution of Portia. Like Portia has always like exhausted me. Portia is one of the most beautiful people you'll ever see in your goddamn life. Like point blank period, right? Mm-hmm. But like the shit that comes out of her mouth sometimes.
Listen, when Sister Soulja was like, I think they went on a tour of in Savannah.
What were they calling her? Portia Luther King or something?
Portia. They went on a tour of Savannah and they were in like this historical church that was like a stop on the Underground Railroad. And she was like, okay, but like how they get on it? Where the dough at?
Travell, Lavelle, DeMarcus, Jonte Houston. Anderson Jones Jenkins. Asked them how they got onto the Underground Railroad, I was like, I can never take you seriously again. I can't.
Oh God!
Like you're literally from a civil rights family talking about how did they get on the train? Like what?
But that is one of those just like unscripted moments that like is just couldn't so have seen coming. Good. You couldn't have seen it coming because she didn't see it coming. Okay?
Honey, and she was looking out for it.
But like that's
where's the train?
I think that scene and that whole storyline is and her, right? Actually, you know what? Portia's storyline might be the thing that I think we love, you know, part of the most. And I mean by that I mean like the trajectory, right?
No,
of like
that's not how my story. No, that is
what I mean is we've seen Portia grow up. Portia was a child, okay? Portia was only interested in being a wife, right, to that man, okay? She wouldn't go to the strip club without his permission. And now Portia's out here getting locked up for the cause, okay? Portia's out here, you know, in the streets, honey. Doing what needs to be done, okay? That is the American dream.
Travell, I'm trying to wait and let you have this pregnant pause because I don't feel all that about Portia. I just don't. I mean, look, my feelings were hurt for her when what's his name?
Cordell.
The husband with the hot dogs.
Dennis.
Dennis. When Dennis cheated on her and whatever was happening with the animals or whatever, like,
oh Lord, don't
I don't
do
know
that.
What happened. I'm not even really clear, like, what he was accused of regarding animals. So I'm not going to even get into that. But, like, I was hurt for her because I know she was so excited to have the baby and little PJ, which never enjoyed that nickname. But, you know, if it works for y'all, get your lives. But Portia has always kind of ran me. Like, I think she's gorgeous. I think she is funny. But, like, the bit that she gives on the show sometimes really, really drags me. I think my favorite person is Candy. But I also think that, like, Kenya has added something to that show since she came onto it that, like, is undeniable.
Gone with the Wind, fabulous. Okay? Thank you.
It is, like, as Wendy would call it, like, a ticky-ticky boom. It's, like, and, like, I was devastated for her when she, like, finally got married, finally had this baby, and, like, the next year it fell apart. And I was so hurt for her because I know that storyline, right? Like, I think part of the reason that we do love this show is because we've seen these people go through so much. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why any show where you have people on, like, living their lives for years and years and years, you grow more and more attached to them, whether you even like them or not, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah. Right. And I love how, you know, these are new money blacks, right? Like, these aren't people who, like, were born into money. Some have married into money. Candy Burris has made all her coins.
Listen.
Okay. Some others, you know, did what they needed to do until they could, you know, get on the show, right?
I feel like there's a NeNe line right here somewhere.
Close your legs to that lady's husband.
But, like, I love the idea of seeing new money black, seeing and having that idea that, like, for example, with NeNe's story, right? You can do what you need to do to provide for your family by stripping. And then, you know, 20 some odd years later, you on Broadway.
I mean, it is an extraordinary story. I just think about the episode with them at the strip club and her up there on the thing with the pole. And it was so bad. And, like, I can't even imagine her as a stripper now, but it's crazy to me. I think part of what I also enjoy about the show is, like, I lived in Atlanta for 6 years. How long did you live in Atlanta?
I was there for school and only
okay,
4 years.
Okay, so I was there for 6 years, and, like, I really enjoyed Atlanta when I was there, but, like, I don't feel like I know the city anymore, and so, like, it is a bit nostalgic for me to watch it and feel, like, the familiarity of, like, certain places when they pop up, and I'm like, oh, I recognize that. But, like, more than anything, it's the only franchise that I really watch regularly. I've tried to dip into other ones. I tried to dip into, like, the OC back in the day, and I was like, I can't even tell these women apart. Like, I don't know what their difference is between them.
Y'all, Jared just said all white people look alike.
Not what I said, but I mean, to be fair, like, I could not figure out the storylines, like, who was who and going on. I tried Beverly Hills for a season. I enjoyed that a few years ago, and, like, I'm kind of dipping into that one. Potomac is okay for me, but it's never, like, gripped me. Mm-hmm. But Atlanta is always the one that we've come back to. So what are the things that you feel like really are a challenge for you?
So here's the thing. Even when we decided to do this topic, I don't think I have many issues, if any issues, with the show. Like, we can engage in a conversation about the whole, you know, not representing black women well and all of that, which I know you have a couple points on that aspect. But, like, black women fight. All women fight. All people fight, you know? But so, let me say, after I said to myself, oh, I don't have no negatives, I then, a couple that did come up in my head, and I was like, Kim Zolciak should have never been on the show.
Okay.
And then I was like, you know, the same.
Kim should, hold on. Kim should have never been on the show?
Never been on the show.
You mean to tell me, like, we would have never gotten tardy for the party. Yeah. We would have never gotten the ring doesn't mean a thing. We wouldn't have had that epic fight between her and Candy for the whole season about the money.
We would have never gotten
the wig shift.
We would never had where is your scooter? Really?
You done had everything to happen. Yeah. Where is your scooter? Where is your scooter? Where is it?
Where is your scooter? We would have never, Sheree would have never reached into that synthetic blonde hair and just shifted it. I just wanted to shift it. Like, we would have never had that moment.
But I feel like, specifically on Kim Zolciak, and we can go back to the other people, I just feel like her presence on the show, even from the beginning, it felt staged. It felt like they knew there was going to become a race issue, and they were just waiting it out until it happened, and then it happened, and everybody was just like, oh my God.
See, I didn't think that. I felt like Kim Zolciak was always, like, in on the joke. Like, she was always in on the bit, right? Like,
no.
I get it. I'm the white girl amongst the black women, but that's kind of the life that I live. The challenge that I had with Kim Zolciak, really, a lot of it had to do with Sweetie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was always, Sweetie! And it was like, excuse me? Like,
it was very...
Sweetie!
It was very... I don't want to use that language, so I'm not going to use it. But it was very plantation tease.
I was going to say what you mean.
It was very plantation tease. I'll leave it there.
I had real challenges around Sweetie. And then, like, she met...
Croy.
Ted Mark Croy. Thank you. And, like, Croy, very handsome guy. I don't know how he puts up with her shit. The thing about Kim Zolciak that's crazy to me is, like, I don't understand where the money's coming from. Because they got 47 kids.
No one does, my love.
A Georgia mansion, and I don't get where the money's coming from.
Tardy from the party, because she ain't pay Candy.
Honey, if she's still living off tardy for the party, Candy really did a wonder, let me tell you. But for me, like, I think part of the reason that the show's gotten difficult for me, this last reunion, the virtual reunion that they did, something about it just didn't sit well with me, like... Shut the fuck up, bitch, or something like that was said, and it hit different, and I was like, I don't want to see that. Like, I have always said, like, I know black women, a million different black women. I don't know one black woman that is gonna throw a drink across a table at dinner.
I do. She's my auntie.
I don't know her.
I do.
And I'm not saying she doesn't exist. I'm just saying I don't get her.
Now,
I'm sure there's a black woman that I know that is listening to this that's like, so I need to tell you.
I got a confession.
Right. Once or twice or six times, I might have. But I don't know those women. And so, like, I see that and I'm like, who does that in real life? Like, throws a cocktail. First of all, this cocktail was $17. Okay?
Okay.
I'm not throwing this money across the table.
They got it, though.
And then I part of that, well, some of them do. But the other part of it for me is that, like, I get frustrated with, like, the shit that they do on the show in juxtaposition to, like, the white franchises. Like, they took a trip to Destin, which is, like, at the Florida line, I think. Or is in South Georgia. And
that,
like,
was a few seasons ago.
I don't care. Like, they went to Destin. And I was like, nobody's like, hey, you guys want to drive to Ensenada? Like, nobody does that. Like, it's just ridiculous, like, that they just drove to Destin and did, like, a vacation episode. I felt like their vacations always make me want for more. And then, like, sometimes they have done really big ones, right? They went to South Africa. They've gone to, you know, Greece and stuff like that. So, like, some of those have been cool, but that just kind of frustrates me as well. But I also, lastly, I feel like the format is getting old to me. Like, I'm having a really difficult time understanding why you hate person X because person X said you know, blah, 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 blah about you. You are also about to open up a brand new business. You're going to invite person X to that opening? That just don't make no sense to me. Like, I don't know where you
well,
do that.
I will make it make sense, and I know you know this, but the reason why they do that is because they're able to get the production to pay for, like, a lot of the trips.
No, I mean, I get that.
And so, but that's why they do it, right? Like, and that's why a lot of them have stayed on the show in spite of, right, a lot of the drama, is because not only are you getting a check for being on here, if you can use it to promote your business, if you can use it to get, you know, Bravo to cover some of the expenses for some of the different events that you put on, like, why not?
Let this be your last fake check you gotta get from me.
See, the business side of it, I get. Like, I've heard Candy say before, like, every season she is launching a new thing, right? It's a restaurant, it's a sex toy line, it's the franchise of the restaurant, it's a, you know, whatever it is. And, like, I appreciate the hustle of that. I guess for me, it always has been weird just, like, watching people, like, do things that are completely unnatural. Like, I don't like that bitch, so let me have her over to my house. And it's like, what? Like,
See, I think you are confusing it with the Love and Hip Hops of the world. Like, I think you're confusing it with the
okay,
shows
to be fair,
that have
Princess
come
Love,
after.
Princess Love did tear up the Blazer line release. I do get that. Okay? But, like, Love and Hip Hop... And I think you bring up a good point. Because, like, there's Love and Hip Hop, right? Which, I mean, we're talking about The Real Housewives of Atlanta. All of these... Like, I feel like if, you know, The Real Housewives of Atlanta was a rapper, she'd, like, be like, all these bitches are my sons. Right?
That part.
But, like, I feel like 11 Hip Hop feels so staged, right?
Like, and it is.
Right, because it is. But then, like, even their interviews are, like, clearly in front of a green screen, and they're doing all these extra hand motions, and it's a lot. And, like, I don't even buy it. And so Atlanta, at least, I tend to buy it more than some of the other shows that I watch. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's still those moments where the person is doing something that feels unreasonable to me that I'm like, you're only doing this because you're on TV. Like, to be very honest with you, I have a hard time believing, like, Candy would be hanging out with a lot of these women if she wasn't getting paid for it. There are times when she, like, shows up at an event and, like, Candy's my favorite person, but I'm like, if Candy didn't have to be here, she would not be here with you people. Like,
well,
she would
be
doing
something
else.
And Candy has told us that, right? Candy has literally said that I don't like, because Candy doesn't drink. She doesn't really, I guess, move through, right, the Atlanta scene in the ways that some of the other, you know, more socialite-based girls do. And so I agree with that. But
while we're on Candy, I have to say, and Mama Joyce. You know what? I'm going to just say that.
That's all you're going to say?
I think that's enough.
Listen, yeah, we all want to talk about nobody mama, I guess. I find Mama Joyce entertaining. I also find her dramatic and overblown, but I find her entertaining. And that's, like, all I can really say.
She wears my spirit out. Like, her, all of her dealings with Todd, like, I get her being protective of Candy, right? Like, you should be. But, like, at some point...
There was a moment where it went overboard. There was a moment where it was like, all right, girl, calm down. But... Again, as a viewer, I was entertained. I did want to say, you know, the one moment that gave me pause. Not the one moment, but one of the moments that gave me pause about the show was, I think it was season 9, which was the whole season where Phaedra had lied to Portia about... The sex dungeon, Candy trying to drug her, trying to rape her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That season for me was like,
shut up! That is so stupid!
I think that was one of the examples where I was like, oh, Phaedra, you really, Phaedra? Really, really, Fae?
That was a lot. That was a lot. But
that,
also,
that was too much.
Because I don't think we've spoken the name of Phaedra Parks enough in this episode. Have to say that Phaedra Parks gave us one of the best reads I have ever experienced in my life. Jordan, can you drop it in right here?
And while she's sitting around running around talking about my husband and the father of my children, and she spends her weekends peddling through sperm banks, looking through catalogs to try to find a donor, honey, you don't know if your baby dad will be an axe murderer or a child molester, because what you will know is that he needed $10 to get him a medium-sized pizza so he ejaculated in a cup so you could have a kid. Now check that.
Baby, that read is the nastiest thing. It's got to be in the top 10 nastiest reads of all time. And like the best part of it is watching Candy off to the side trying not to laugh. Because it's delicious. It is just, mwah, chef's kiss. It's so good.
So let me ask you this. So, you know, this genre, right? The ensemble reality genre, I feel like, has gotten a lot of criticism, like I've said, over the years. We've seen so many other types of show come in its shadow, right? Or come in its, come follow it, I should say.
Or you bitches is my sons.
Okay. And we also have, like, just general conversations about, like, how reality television is trash and it's poisoning our brains and all this other stuff. Like, do you feel like we have graduated from, you know, a time period in which Real Housewives of Atlanta, as well as some of the other these other reality shows, makes sense to even be something on TV?
You know, I keep wondering, is this genre on its way out, or is this, like, is this collection of people on its way out, right? Like, like for instance, the cast of Atlanta, or, you know, the cast of the OC, which I don't even know if the OC is still on, but I know that was the first one. Because, like, all of this, fun fact, was based off of Desperate Housewives, right? Like, when Desperate Housewives was on ABC from Mark Cherry, like, the idea of this kind of grew out of that, which is why Housewives is in the title. And so I don't know if it still works. Like, I still watch it on Sundays. It's great when it's on, but, like, I'm also, I don't know what it needs, but I'm kind of getting tired of it is what I think is the problem. Like, it's just not feeling new anymore. It's not feeling exciting the way that it used to. I will be there when they come back for season 13 and see what they're giving, but, like, it's hard and hard. Are you feeling like after all of this, after all of the perspective that we've had, how are you feeling about season 13 coming up?
I'm going to be watching for Candy Burris, okay? Candy Burris Tucker, excuse me. Whoa. Because I really do find myself entertained. I'm also interested to see how they go about all of this in light of the corona. Because, like, they've been filming, like, regular degla schmegla, I think with smaller crews, but, like, they've been filming normally. And so, like, I'm interested to see it. I'm interested to see if they go on a trip. I'm interested to see what new women they add to the cast. I think there's, like, two or three that will be added.
There's two different people coming. Eva Marcille is leaving the show, which I think is great because I don't think she really added anything to it in the first place.
I liked her, but I don't enjoy her
on the show.
She didn't fit the group well to me.
She was very Claudia to me. Like, Claudia Jordan really didn't add much to the shot. I'm thinking they really added something. Drew Sidora, who I want to say Kid Fury and Crystal may have said, like, I didn't realize Drew Sidora was a real person. Exactly. Drew Sidora was, like, the love interest on The Game, and I always thought she was a character. I didn't know that was a real person.
I hate you so much.
I really didn't. No shade, Drew Sidora.
I said what I said.
I would say love you, but I literally don't know you.
I hate you so much.
So I hope that she's good on the show. And then LaToya Ali, who I also don't know.
LaToya Ali?
Yeah. This is according to People Magazine. They say that LaToya... LaToya Forever, confirmed in June that she and her husband, Adam Ali, are calling it quits after 6 years of marriage. I believe that LaToya's storyline, part of it was that, like, she couldn't have her kids on the show, and it was, like, this debate over whether or not she could. But she has 1.4 million subscribers on YouTube. Part of the conversation has been that they want to pull in a younger demographic for the show, and so bringing in Drew Sidora...
No, thank you.
LaToya Ali is supposed to do that, I guess.
No, thank you.
Listen, I will tell you, I cannot wait for this super trailer to come out so that we can see what the season's going to give. But, like, I just can't say that, like, I'm thrilled about it, but I want to see what they're going to give.
Yeah.
And I want to see how Kenya plays with these new girls.
I don't need them trying to market to the YouTube generation, okay? I don't want that.
Wow, you sound like an old lady.
I'm just saying, I don't want that. Eva was a good addition because we knew her, right? We had some sort of familiarity with her from Top Model, and theoretically,
you know,
we thought she was gonna bring it, and she brought it a little beat.
But we didn't think that with Kenya, and like Kenya, as much as Kenya has had an illustrious career as an actress.
But you're disrespectful.
But we didn't really know Kenya when she came in, right? Like, nobody was like, oh my God, is that Miss...
But Kenya came in like a tornado, girl.
Yeah, she did.
Okay.
I mean, literally, she came in Gone with the Wind Fabulous.
In a good way, right? In a good way. Whereas some of the other new, like Shamari, when Shamari came on, she was just like trying too hard. Yeah, she was just trying too hard. Anyway, I think we up at the time limit, child.
Oh, Jordan's going to start yelling at us. So we want to know what you all think about NeNe leaving the Real Housewives of Atlanta. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fanti Podcast. That's at Fanti Podcast. You can tweet us, DM us, or you can shoot us an email. And we do listen to your feedback, as you'll find out after this quick break. Fanti's coming right back. Do you have a lot on your mind in times of stress or anxiety? It can be hard to remember to take time to focus on yourself, but your joy and pleasure are so important.
This sounds okay.
Especially right now. Jordan says, no. Put your well-being first with Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories and wellness sessions that are really designed to turn you on and help you get in touch with yourself. These stories are relatable and immersive, and the wellness sessions can also help you to unlock new confidence or heighten intimacy with your partner. What I thought was actually really cool about Dipsy is that it's very queer friendly. It has stories about women with women, men with men.
Non-binary folks.
Combinations of any and everything that you might be into. Dipsy is is definitely the perfect place for you to check out these really cool and sexy stories.
Yes, and you know, back in my day, we used to have Zane, okay? You know, I came up on Zane, honey, all right? And maybe you want to get your Zane on, okay? So, for listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. That's dipsystories.com/fanti.
Go get you a story.
Alrighty, now we're going to get into our listener feedback. This is the opportunity in the show where we read out some of your comments, your text messages, your emails, your DMs, and we allow you to read us when appropriate. Okay, so we've got some we've got some words that were shared. Before I go to this email that I have, I want to hit two things. So Bianca, one of my good Judies, Bianca, she texted me mad that I said that, you know, perhaps whippings are like a rites of passage for
the
blacks.
She was the only one that was upset, I think. I think that was just her.
You are a fool. Anyway, as I told her, rites of passages across cultures are often sometimes violent and sometimes abusive, okay?
Yikes.
And so it just is a fact. I didn't make the rules. I also wanted to talk about, you know, some of the feedback that we got, right, was about the research that I referenced, and people felt as if I was like, basically excusing or questioning this, you know, fairly, you know, consensus decision, right, that the medical establishment has around, like, you know, how beating your kids, whooping your kids can lead to, you know, these negative factors, right, in adulthood. And I wanted to clarify that, you know, me asking questions about, like, whether a study is culturally competent and takes into consideration how, you know, whoopings and beatings and spankings manifests and mean a variety of different things in certain cultures as opposed to others is not me calling into question, right, the decisions, right, that have come from it. It's me making sure and wanting to ensure that the research is as representative, as nuanced, as reflective, right, of the entire, you know, circumstance and situation, right? Because here on this show, we're talking about our experiences as Black folks, right, as it relates to this. And if these studies aren't interviewing or talking to Black folks, then, like, maybe they're not the best for us to use. And when you read the abstracts that many of you sent us, when you read, a couple of you sent us the 2018 New York Times article in which the medical establishment basically changed their advisement on spankings and whoopings to say don't do it because it can lead to, you know, negative outcomes in adulthood. Even in that, you know, explication, if you will, of their decision and their study, no one talks about race. No one talks about class. No one talks about any of these other, you know, intersecting factors, right, that impact how and how kind of representative a study can be on a particular issue. That being said, the research does say, and there's a consensus that spankings, whoopings leads to negative, can lead to, you know, negative outcomes in childhood, which brings me to an email from Kristen, who says that they are an early childhood educator and mom.
Well, before we do that, I will say that, like, in response to all of the feedback that we got, a lot of it directed at you, but a lot of it directed at the both of us. I have been really reluctant to even, like, engage this too much more. I responded to some things on Reddit, which I didn't even know there was a whole Reddit thread. Like, that was brand new to me. Mm-hmm. But to be very, very honest and, like, candid, all of the negative feedback that I saw was white people being upset about this experience that we had shared of our own experiences, which really said to me this was white people not understanding that we were talking about our own Black, our cultural experience, right, of our experience of being raised and how, you know, that was within our culture, I should say. And so I felt like, well, if it's just white people that don't understand, white people don't understand. Well, that's kind mm-hmm. of that, you know, that happens here a lot. And so I didn't feel like we needed to do, like, a whole bunch of exposition on, like, how white people felt about it, because we're not here to censor the stories of white people or the perspective of the white person, right, who doesn't necessarily understand. That's literally what we do a lot here. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of white people, we have an email here from Kristen.
Speaking of white people.
And I wanted to read her email because I think that she, I think how she approached kind of, you know, wanting to share her perspective was, like, a good one. And so she says that she is an early childhood educator and mom, and she felt like our episode on whoopings had her shaking, she says. Loves the podcast, regularly sends episodes to friends and families, and she says while she appreciates our personal stories, she wishes we would have brought on an expert on child psychology, because physically hurting children teaches them that it's okay for someone who loves you to hurt you, or that it's okay to hurt someone you love, as long as it's in the name of, quote, betterment. This can lead to adults who get trapped in abusive relationships and don't know how to safely get out. She starts sharing some experience that she's had with students in her classes where minor things happen and they burst out in tears because they're afraid of getting a whooping at home and they're fearful of their family. And I thought that her approach to, like, and we had a number of other, you know, teachers or child psychologists or folks who are in the field who spoke about some of the, I think, the other side, right, of the experience of being, you know, physically disciplined, whoopings, corporal punishment, etc., that does very much, you know, unequivocally is in that abuse area, in that, like, you know, that area of, like, you know, you shouldn't be fucking hitting your kids, you know, or taking out your anger on them. And so I liked how she shared her perspective while also giving space for us to have the experiences that we had.
Yeah, so to that point, we had discussion about bringing on an expert for the episode, and, you know, opted not to. We were citing data, and as we do in a lot of other episodes when we don't have a guest or an expert. And so I think it's a fair request or a fair thought. It's not what we chose to do, but it's definitely something that we were, you know, thinking about doing. So, yeah, I mean, I hear the perspective, yeah. And yeah, I'm going to take a look at this Reddit comment that came in. I don't have the person's name, so I don't know if they want to be named or not. But taking a part of what she said there needs, because the Reddit thread was kind of lit. People were feeling a way about it, and some of those people probably aren't listening this week, according to what their comments said. But part of the comment from this mom said there needs to be more context, cultural understanding, and acknowledgement of the role that white supremacy plays within family dynamics in this conversation. Please, she says, please pause the eye roll and stick with me. While millions of enslaved people raised their children and then millions more raised their children during Jim Crow, how vital was it for Black children to remain in line and silent? What happened when a Black kid points at a white man and asks why his nose is so big? Today in the grocery store, my kid is whiny, throws food on the floor, I get annoyed looks, and someone stops to help. But for a Black family, this could easily be removal from the store and even the police call. Black children do not get to experience joy, play, anger, or any other emotions in the same way that is allowed of white and non-Black children. Yelling, swatting, spanking can be tools for survival. Tools for survival are passed down and can change seemingly far from the original use, but it is on white people to create a world where kids can be kids and make mistakes. But she goes on and talks about how, you know, I don't choose to spank my kids, but I recognize, like, for some folks that is the case. She said, if my kid was doing something that put him in imminent danger and verbal request was ignored, I would absolutely use physical force to save him. I don't think that we can discredit and villainize all parents who have had to learn to keep their children alive. Don't forget that Emmett Till was brutally murdered for whistling at a white woman. And she has a much longer comment there, but like, I think when we were talking about post-traumatic slave syndrome and the ways mm-hmm. that I was saying that I believe that, you know, this has roots in slavery, I think this really hits on that really well. Like, I think that parents, Black parents specifically, probably, and this is what I'm surmising from, you know, my own anecdotal experience, I think that Black parents do tend to have a higher stakes kind of approach when it comes to getting their kids in line because of the history of what it has looked like to be a Black kid that is seen as problematic, a Black kid that is seen as violent or irresponsible or, you know, a bad kid or whatever. We see all kinds of data that talks about the experiences that Black children have in school versus white kids. We see all mm-hmm. kinds of things where we see Black folks in the street being handled by the police in all kinds of different ways. We know that Black women, you know, have the highest mortality rate when they go to the hospital. We know that Black folks tend to have more instances of illness. Like, there's all kinds of different things that are factors in the ways that we live our lives. And I think that all of those things kind of are a part of that conversation.
And the last thing I'll say on this is, like, if you heard us sharing our experiences and maybe you didn't get the message because we were more comedic with it and we were, you know, light with it because it's our lived experience, we ain't telling nobody to whoop your kids or to whoop any kid, okay?
Absolutely. Period. Yeah. I mean, yeah, someone said that we were child abuse apologists, and I was like, can you explain to me how that even is a thing that we're talking about here? But never mind.
Anyway,
it is time for dishonorable mentions. These are the stories of people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or their stupid. Let's talk about some of the things from the Emmys really quickly.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go first. We have done an episode on Tyler Perry. Say what you want to say about Tyler Perry, and we have here.
That's for sure.
Right? But Tyler Perry getting the Governor's Award at the Emmys, I think, was just such an extraordinary moment. And a rather curious one. Like, Tyler Perry, I don't think, has ever been nominated for an Emmy. I don't know that I've even seen him there many times, because, like, Tyler Perry does not get love from the Emmys, right? So to see him getting a Governor's Award and getting to get up and make this speech, I thought it was an epic moment for him. And, you know, congratulations to him. All of the other shit aside, about how you feel about the creative, like, him having that moment there was pretty extraordinary.
I want to give a shout out to Zendaya for winning her Emmy for Best Lead Actress in a Drama. She is the first or the second Black woman to win that award in 70 some odd years after Viola Davis won it for How to Get Away with Smurda. Zendaya won it for her stunning performance in Euphoria, and she deserves. I mean, it was wonderful to see her in that particular moment and recognized in that particular way. So that was definitely my standout. Oh, and Regina King, because, I mean, Regina King.
Like, shout out to all of the black folks who won, right? Like, I think one of my favorite moments was Yaya when he thought he was off screen. Yes. And, like, got up and jumped and was so excited. Like, I love that moment. I love Regina King. I love Zendaya's family behind her. Yeah. Having that huge celebration. I thought that was a really, really good moment.
And can we just say, I'm sorry, last thing. This is the dishonorable mention part of the honorable mention. I need next year, if they do the virtual thing again, I need them to separate the categories, okay? What they did this year, which they haven't done in a minute, right?
Oh, they kind of blended them.
No, well, they did all comedy first and then all drama. And so Schitt's Creek sweeped all of its comedy categories. And so it was Schitt's Creek, Schitt's Creek, Schitt's Creek, Schitt's Creek. And so it was just like, are you kidding me? And that's not to take anything away from Schitt's Creek, right? But it became mundane in that particular way. Whereas if they had mixed up the categories as they've historically done, if I'm not mistaken, then I think that would have given it a little bit more variety for me at home.
I will say that I was really, really impressed with the production that they did. I mean, aside from like the run of the show, but I thought, I just thought they did a really, really cool, innovative thing. And I've mm-hmm. really been enjoying this year seeing how the award shows and the conventions and mm-hmm. all of these big live events, how they're figuring out how to translate that to television. I think it's been really, really cool.
And last thing I'll say about the Emmys, shout out to Reginald Hudlin, black icon, who was one of the producers of the Emmys this year.
My last Emmy shout out is going to go to Rami, who had my favorite tweet of the night. If you guys were yes. watching the Emmys, you saw that they had hazmat tuxedo drivers that were running all around town to deliver Emmys for the folks. And Rami was up for, I actually interviewed him for a Variety, and he was a really, really great guy. And I was excited for him. And he didn't win. And so he had this tweet video of the person standing outside, like holding the Emmy and like waving goodbye and leaving with the Emmy. And he was like, when you lose the Emmy, it was just a really funny moment. And I really appreciated that. I'm looking forward to like the behind the scenes coverage of how they did this Emmys, because it was really, really interesting. Yeah.
And then I feel like we've done 100 million of these already. So I'll just give one last honorable mention to my man. Okay.
Oh.
He was awarded, I guess is what they call it, a residency with the Studio Museum of New York.
Mm.
And so shout out to him for being fabulous and talented and wonderful and all of that good stuff.
Do you want
to
say his name and how people can find him?
Oh, sure. It's all on the internet. Texas Isaiah. You can follow him on Instagram at King Texas. You can follow him on Twitter at Texas Isaiah. You can pay him and hire him at TexasIsaiah.com.
He said the Cash App is in the description of this episode. That is it for us. We really appreciate you being a part of the show and tuning in every week. We ask that if you're listening on Apple Podcasts that you give us a 5-star review and leave us like an actual review. Let us know what you're thinking about the show. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, as many of you often do, you can tweet at us or drop us a DM at Fanti Podcast. That's at Fanti Podcast, all is one word, Twitter and Instagram, or you can send us an email, fanti@maximumfun.org.
And now, while we know that we aren't perfect all the time, we do know that we're still your favorite podcast. If you are not yet a member of the Fanti fam, you can do that very easily by joining the Maximum Fun family at MaximumFun.org/join. And as always, send us an email, do what you do, everything like that. Our music is brought to you by Corey, Corr.ece. He's celebrating 1 year since his most recent album, Him, came out. So make sure you stream that. Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your tunes. And then shout out to our graphics that are done by Ashley Wen.
Our producer this week is Jordan Keller.
When we talk about fabulosity, I don't see it.
And Laura Swisher.
This is the hair that I chose to buy.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Who said that?
Who said that?
Who said that?
Who said that?
Who said that?